Hello to you and welcome to the Jewellers Podcast. So I am joined today by the Serpent King of Death. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, how are you going?
Yeah, very good. And your handle is at Moon Jewelry Design.
AKA Serpent King of Death.
Very good.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
It's not that... It actually came about me and one of my mates when we were getting on the schooners and that. He started calling himself Big Dog. I started calling myself Serpent King of Death. Just as like this sort of, what's the most ridiculous nicknames we could come up with?
Sure.
And I started making, at that same time, I started making my own jewelry.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt it could use like a brand or a name.
Yeah,
I like the idea of having some guy who's the Serpent King that no one really sees or knows.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he runs around on motorbikes and listens to Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and's like a bit of a party animal.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause
and
then,
he pours his essence into...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So...
Your jewelry.
It was like a... anyone can make like... chunky silver rings,
yep.
I felt. A lot of people buy things or get into things because it fits their style or they like the story behind it.
Yes.
So that's where I sort of started using that stupid nickname into the jewelry.
Yeah, sure. Well, it breathes a bit of life into it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think exactly the same. Like... gives it some personality and an option for you as well. So you can go you can do sort of the regular jewellery making and then you can branch off to do something a bit more extravagant and fun and experimental and...
Yeah, like a little bit more left field, a little bit more out there.
Yeah, right. Off the wall.
Yeah, it's something I've always felt that there's been jewelry out there that I'm almost attracted to, but I'm not because it doesn't quite fit my style or whatever. So I thought, well, maybe I just try this, see what happens, you know?
Yep, yep.
If it takes off, that's awesome. If it doesn't, then, you know, can always change it to something else maybe, yeah. You know?
What were the first things that you made in that kind of personality?
First things I started making with that was like a whole bunch of motorbike themed stuff.
Yeah.
So I was doing like little helmets and pistons and things like that.
Yep.
And then it started sort of blending into this pop culture stuff, Star Wars, things like that, you know.
Sure. So going almost a bit comic booky.
Yeah, I mean... I do have ADHD, so I find sometimes my attention span, I'll be focused, like hyper-focusing on, for instance, the motorbike stuff, and then the next week it's like it didn't even exist. I'm like moved on to something else.
Yeah. So you have to work quick then.
I try.
get it done.
I try and get, when I'm on that sort of spur of the moment wanting to make stuff, I'll try and do it like... use all that energy and just push it out there and try and make as much of it as I can before I get bored of it or move on to something else.
Yeah, sure.
Because I find it very hard to jump back into it.
Yeah.
Maybe because I oversaturate myself with it, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. You kind of get into that creative high and to sort of look back on it, I've made things, I'm like, I don't know how I made that anymore because, like...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I could recreate that because it was just in the moment and it was just in that sort of mania of...
Just chaos, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And then life gets in the way, you know, like...
Oh, sure.
Whatever, like, I've got a couple of big jobs I want to do and then I'll be working on them and it'll be really fun and I've got the inspiration. Then all of a sudden someone will want some wedders or whatever or an engagement ring.
Yep.
And that's a paying job, so, you know, you kind of sort of jump on that. And then that love project sort of gets pushed to the side and then all of a sudden you pull it out and you're like, oh, where was I with that, you know? What,
Yeah, right.
I was in the middle, and then by the usually I sit down and I get it all out and lay it all out, and I'm like, ah, so I was about to solder this, and then something else happens, you know. So
yeah, right. So those first things that you were making, helmet, key rings, and such, you were making them in brass, bronze, and silver. Hey.
Yeah, that was. It was also. I've been making jewelry since I was probably. I was trying to think the other day. I started doing it in year 9.
Okay.
So
what's that? Is that 13, 14-ish?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did it at school, got an apprenticeship, and then I was working in a shop in Wagga.
Yep.
Wagga Wagga. And it was doing repairs and, like, stock standard wedders, engagement rings and things like that. And then I moved up to Sydney, and I never really got the chance to experiment on my own.
Yep.
Yeah,
sure. So you were employed.
Yeah.
So job.
The helmets and stuff, that was my first sort of getting into the industry in the sense of like, okay, I want to get this cast. Who do I go to? Trial and error of working out what materials work. Because I was quite naive and like, oh, I can make this, this, and this, and that all sell. And then
yeah.
None of them sell, or one will, or, you know. So,
yeah, right. It's hard to get things out there. If it's a new thing as well.
That too.
Yeah.
And it's, that stuff's also, it's always been a semi-hobby.
Yeah.
In the sense it's not my bread and butter yet.
Yeah.
I've always been employed on the bench or, you know, working for someone else, getting a paycheck and all that.
So out of those materials that you were working with, brass, bronze and silver, because I've worked in silver and brass, but never bronze. Brass was hard work.
Hard work, and it's got this odd smell to it.
Yeah.
Like this gassy sort of smell once you work with it. It's something coming out of the metal or whatever. That's what we used at high school.
Oh, sure.
It was brass and nickel silver.
Yeah, it makes a mess of your bench as well.
Yeah, and your fingers start turning green and...
It's pretty gross.
All that sort of stuff. But it's good in the sense that the material's cheap.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to work with. It can be like a bit of a bitch to solder and stuff, but if you're learning... If anything, that's sort of better, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Learning with something that's semi-difficult.
Yeah.
And like I said, because it's cheap, you can experiment a lot.
Yep.
You know?
And what's bronze like?
I didn't do too much of that. I think I made like a couple of prototypes, and there was only one company that I found that was casting it.
Yep.
And it just sort of – I sold one or two, and then it just sort of fell – by the wayside, and like I said, there's only one place that was doing it, so
yeah. Okay, so why do you think that people aren't casting in bronze? Is this a difficult thing to cast?
Maybe it's, yeah, got no clue. Might be difficult to cast, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. So, do you do any casting yourself?
No, I don't know how to do that. I've done cuttlefish castings and stuff,
yeah.
Some basic stuff, but I do a lot of work in wax, and I feel like I've invested so much time in the wax. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
In the wax. I'm better off giving it to someone that has the experience and also the tools,
yes.
Which would be of a higher quality than what I could afford.
Yeah, right.
Knocking around in my garage, yeah.
It's going to be, I don't have casting equipment, but it's going to be expensive, take up a lot of space.
A lot of space. And then you run through the risk of miscasting, you know?
Yeah.
And if you've spent all that time in a wax.
Oh, sure.
Because
you're not doing, you're doing one-offs, hey? So.
I do some one-offs. I'm doing a series of rings at the moment.
Yeah.
Which aren't one-offs, but I made, like, all the different masters and stuff.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that much work in it. because they're pretty basic sort of signet rings.
Yeah, yeah.
There is one piece I'm working on, which is quite a big piece.
Yeah.
It's like a giant squid necklace thing.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks I'm mad. I've been telling my missus about it, and she's like, "Oh, this thing. Like, what are you doing?" I'm like,
it's your opus.
Yeah, I say that, and she's like, "You're only 30, mate. Like, you got plenty of time to make that." I'm like, "Do I? You know?"
Yeah, right. Well, if it's not your opus, it's your practice opus.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's been a bit of trial and error working out what I can and can't do. Because a lot of the time I'd rush head into a project,
yeah,
and come out the other side and realize that stone doesn't exist in that size, or
you
can't cast it like that. You have to cut it in half or hollow it out or whatever, you know.
So what are some? Can you think of some lessons learned of how to make waxes that are going to be a successful cast?
I usually just go. I have an idea in my head.
Yeah.
I chop off the wax, the little block or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then I have a set of scales there, and I've got the weight conversion sitting on my bench.
Yeah, sure.
For silver, it doesn't matter that much because it's pretty cheap, and I feel a silver signet ring with a lot of weight sort of – I find people pick up a ring, usually one that I make, and they go, "Oh, it's like heavy," because a lot of stuff's hollowed out these days.
Yeah,
and it's not that much weight. If it's like platinum or something, it's a different story.
Yeah.
But that's where the scales come in handy, and it's kind of fun working out. Like for instance, with that giant squid, there was one part I wanted to do in rose gold. It was quite large, and I was shaving like minuscule amounts off it and just whacking it on the scales and looking at the chart and going, okay, well, it's going to cost $30 or $40 of silver versus $700 or $800 of rose.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, racks up quickly. Yeah. And then sometimes if you're working in gold, you have to decide between it looks great the way it is, but do I take some off it?
Yeah,
For the sake of price.
Price, and also you got to work out. You also got to put into perspective that when you do get that cast back, you will have to clean it up. You know.
Yeah.
Depending on the finish you want on it, if you want it, you know, highly polished or.
Yeah.
I find with working in wax, I will do 95% of it in the wax.
Get it
as crisp as I can.
Yeah.
It's still soft, so just touching it, if you get like a razor sharp edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, you got to think about when it's cast, it's not going to come out with that crisp edge because of the plaster and
XYZ.
So I'll do 95% of it or 98% or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And then I'll get the master and then I'll get it razor sharp. Sometimes the edges, I'll actually make sure that they're razor sharp. Because then what is also going to happen with the mold, you're going to lose a bit of that edge in the mold as well.
Yeah.
So you sort of hyperextend those features.
Sure.
Planning that they're going to be lost in some of the process.
Oh, okay. Sure. So
that's what I find anyway, you know.
Yeah. And then your 5% is for edging. For
metals and stuff.
Yeah.
For working the metal, yeah. Whether that be also like a feature in the ring or whatever, like I was doing a 9-carat white gold wetter and he wanted some lettering in it and I can't really hand engrave, so I did most of it in the wax.
Yeah.
And I've learnt through experience you can try and get as crisp as possible, but it's once again being soft, it will... When your hand wobbles or whatever as you're guiding it through, it's going to take that wobble a lot easier into the material than metal.
Yeah.
You got a little bit more leeway in the metal, so.
Yeah, and you're going to have a bit of squash somewhere.
Yeah, that too. So, you know, I did most of it in the wax and then I got it back the other day and It looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
So have there been some big, can you think of some ones that have come out real bad?
Ones where I haven't engraved it deep enough or thick enough.
Yeah.
With the pirate sort of signet rings I was doing. I can actually see, because I did 12 or 13, I can't remember, different rings, and the idea being I would put them out there and see what sticks.
Yeah.
I think they're all awesome. I'll wear them, but yeah. I'm not buying them. So I thought, you know, I'll see what sticks. People might go for this one, that one. And I can see in the first one I did versus the last one I did, the thicknesses of the lines, in the sense that I've gone deeper and wider.
Yeah, sure.
Compensating for the mould.
Sure.
And that's another thing. I don't know too much about moulding, you know.
Yeah.
I just give it to some bloke and he does it for me.
Yeah, sure. And a lot of it is confidence as well. Like, you don't want to go too far because then something else will happen.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, I figure it's similar to, like, in that sort of sense, it's similar to tattooing where you want thick, bold lines.
Yeah.
So over time, the design sort of lasts. It doesn't bleed into itself.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So.
I remember doing a project where something, there was like a pointed edge, like a tail type thing that went to nothing. And the casting company were like, nah.
Yeah, can't do that.
Can't do it. So there's a lot of parameters. Experience and talking to casting companies, most of them are pretty friendly people, hey?
Yeah, oh, like, I mean, yeah, they're really good. Like, when I was doing the squid, I said, like, this is what I want to do, how should I do it? And he's like, well, you can't have the head with the legs or the arms or tentacles, whatever you want to call them.
Sure.
Because the head's so solid and they're so thin.
Yeah, yeah.
The metal will stay molten inside the head.
Oh, so, sure.
Because it's such a heavy piece compared to the rest of it.
Yeah.
So he told me I was better off taking the head off. And then even then, he's like, it's still, because it's so big and solid, it's going to stay molten in the middle and do all sorts of weird stuff. So
yeah,
he's like, you should hollow it out. Like, I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah. So you've done part of your cracking already, hey?
Yeah,
is this your big project?
Yeah, that's a big project. It's pretty much all together. I've got a whole bunch of setting to do. All the so each one of the limbs, I made one tapered rod and soldered, I don't know, like a couple of hundred jump rings onto it.
Okay.
In two rows.
Yeah.
And I got that molded, got the waxes.
Oh, cool.
Melted all the waxes together at the end.
Yeah.
Which then made the head/body.
Yeah.
And got that cast. So the idea being all those suction caps I would set stones into in a sporadic pattern, different colours and stuff. I wanted to sort of give it the feature that it's over time collected bits of treasure and whatnot.
Yes.
Because I've made a tiny little pirate ship that's wrapped up in the tentacles, and the pirate ship will rock to and fro.
Yeah.
It's on a hinge. And then the sail in the ship itself will move as well.
Oh, so you've got a lot to think about.
Yeah, and there's also a submarine in it that rocks, and the propeller and the submarine moves, and the periscope moves around and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, very cool.
So then that's that section of it, the arms, which will go across the chest. Then I've got the cone, I guess, tapered part with the fins on it of the squid. It's hinged. Which, so I've done the hinge. I've just got to do the lock on it.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to a couple of electronic guys into trying to make a light that fades in and out.
Amazing.
I've made a couple of those circuits.
Yeah.
And I've made them fit in, but I haven't made I can't work out the voltage, like a small enough battery to go into it.
But so
once I make the little circuit and the battery, is cover it in silicon.
Okay.
And I've found this little switch. It's called a reed switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's got two little flaps in a tube.
Yeah.
And when you run a magnet over it, they stick together, so then it turns on. So yeah. There's a tiny little angler fish that hangs off the squid,
yeah,
which has a magnet in it, which you then lift to the body to turn the light on. But then this is, I don't know if it's going to work, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It's, and like, I don't want to have anything visible. I don't want to have like a big battery hanging off it or whatnot, you know?
Yeah, right.
Kind of destroys the purpose of it when it's got like a big AA battery on it.
Yeah.
Because the tube itself would be the size of a AA battery.
That sounds amazing, though.
The length of it's probably like 30 centimetres, the whole squid.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's that, a year, 2 year project, like it's, on the side?
I think it's starting to be 2 years.
Yeah.
I had a lot of free time. And then we had a toddler.
Sure.
And I started a new job, and just life in general gets in the way, you know.
Yeah.
Paying jobs and taking care of kids and
yeah,
all that sort of.
And sometimes when you make a design, you're like, oh, this is going to be so good, and it's going to take a long time. It's going to be great, and then it can be be 3 months. And you look back at it and you go, oh, my gosh, it's been 3 months since I've, like, even
100%.
Started looking 100%. At it. And then that turns into 12 months and...
Well, like, last year I had, coming up to Christmas, my beloved bike of 8 years shot the gearbox out the side.
Mm.
And I was in a frantic panic to get a new bike so I could get to and from work. And then I spent like a good 2 months stuffing around with all that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just one of those things of, and also Christmas, that was around Christmas time, and that's like the busiest time for jewelers, really.
So, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Working lots overtime and doing all the Christmas orders and whatnot.
Yeah. Yes. So you've also been making lots of bike orientated. Do some, you call them blaster pendants.
Oh, yeah, that was, that's from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I've got, I think, half my tattoos are Star Wars related.
Yeah, okay.
the missus stopped me from getting, I wanted to get the Falcon tattooed on my chest, and, like, a quote from Han Solo, and she's like, I think that one's a bit too far. 'Cause it was like, you know, the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, you're young, you still got a lot of time to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that Star Wars stuff, I really enjoyed making it, but then I don't know anything about the sort of copywriting of that sort of stuff, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to get caught up in a mess, so.
Yeah, so these are just passion projects for you.
Passion projects, yeah. The bike stuff,
Stuff that you can enjoy, because, like, so, yeah, because if you're working hard at your craft, you want to be able to do something.
Yeah, well, I for a long time I was making stuff that I didn't like, you know, and fixing rings for nanas and all that sort of stuff, which is fine. Like, I love helping out the old ducks, but it doesn't really tickle my fancy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, I'll just make what I want. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
If you build it, they'll come, hopefully, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm finding it's a really good learning curve in the sense that I'm completely on my own.
Yeah.
When I'm doing that stuff. It's all very good to work in a workshop and bounce ideas, which I love doing, off other jewelers. But you don't know how to do something, and you turn to the bloke next to you or girl next to you and you go, what do you think? And they throw their idea. You haven't actually had that idea yourself where you've sat down, looked at it, and nutted it out. And I really enjoy doing that. So I find I'm learning more in the sense of actually taking note of how I did that process or didn't do that process.
Because it's not a chore. You're practicing and learning through something that thrills you,
like. Yeah. Like when I was an apprentice in Wagga, I felt I wasn't learning a lot because I was learning a lot, I got taught by three really good jewelers, but I would just look at something and go, how do I do this? You know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually conceive it myself. And I found a lot of projects daunting when I look at them. I'm like,
yeah,
I don't know how high to make that setting. I don't know how thick to make that setting, you know? I'll just ask someone.
Yeah, sure.
You know? But now that I'm sitting in my garage knocking out a eternity ring or something, and I'm like, oh, geez, how do I do this? And I'm just sort of sit there, sip on a beer or whatever. And
yeah, work it out.
Yeah, like actually nut it out, you know, have a genuine thought, you know.
Yeah.
Which is fun, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Problem solving, I guess. My dad grew up on a farm with not a lot of money, and so did my grandfather, and they have this amazing, uncanny ability at looking at something with very minimal resources and fixing it. And I think it's a skill that's been passed on to me, and it's a good skill being a jeweler where in order to be successful, you need to be resourceful.
Yeah.
It's all well and good to make a beautiful ring, but if you've wasted all this gold and especially time, you're sort of just taking two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a bit like parenthood, isn't it? Like, you have to... It's never the right time. You're never going to be ready. You just got to throw yourself into those sort of situations where you are the only person and you can figure it out. So you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've always got someone to turn to...
I mean, that might work for some people. I mean, there's many ways to skin a cat.
True, true.
That's one cool thing that I had in Wagga where it could also be very difficult in the sense that one of my bosses would walk past and go, oh no, you got to solve it this way. I'm like, okay. And then the other one would walk past and go, what the fuck are you doing? You got to do it this way, you know? But in that sense, and also Josh that worked there, you know, it would be, okay, well, I just got showed how to do the one job three different times. And I've often said to when I try and show people or teach people how to make jewelry, I'm like, I can show you, for example, three different ways or four different ways in how to join this shank.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to show you each way, and you can use whatever way you want. Because I find one job, way A, will work really good.
Yeah.
And then the next job, way B, will work far better than the previous way.
Yeah.
And it just helps with learning, you know, and moving forward. And that's one thing is this industry is it's constantly moving forward with different techniques and styles and tools. And
yeah,
like I remember when I was at TAFE, we were doing CAD, and none of us had ever heard of 3D printing. And like, this is just a waste of time, eh? We said that to the teacher, we're like, why are we doing this? We spent 8 hours doing this ring on CAD. We could spend 8 hours making the ring. And then I think it was honestly like... obviously, 3D printers had come out, but maybe we didn't hear of them. It was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And anyway, a couple of months later, they're like, you know, we could 3D print rings and stuff. And I'm like, oh, shit, maybe I should have paid attention in that class. Because I'm finding... CAD is a big part of this industry.
Yep.
A lot of people don't like that, and that's fine.
Yep.
I mean, it's just is what it is. Some jobs work best in CAD, some don't. You know?
Sure.
But it is a really good tool.
Yeah. I started in CAD.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it. I wish I paid attention.
So. Well... Again, it was something that I really enjoyed, so the learning was easy. And if it's not something you enjoy, the learning isn't going to be just easy.
Me and computers don't work well, hey?
Yeah, right. So I saw on Instagram that you had a piece that was part of the Young Jewelers Group Bench Challenge.
Yeah, so I've done that twice, and I loved both times.
Yeah.
It was, I think jewelers don't like, a lot of jewelers love showing their skill, but they don't like to show how they get there, or they don't want to be put up against someone else and ranked, essentially.
Daunting. I wouldn't do it. Yeah.
But, I remember the first year I did it, I've never been that nervous in my life. And they gave us a pink marquee cut.
Okay.
Like a big CZ, like 5 grams of rose and 5 of white. Huh. And they're like, here's 11 hours, here's the materials, knock whatever the hell you want out. And I looked over, one of the jewelers, he was like hammer and tongs already on the metal. He knew what he was making. I was like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to draw it all out. And there's people like drawing all this stuff and like people hammering things and rolling metal out. And I'm like, I have no clue what I'm doing. And I spent probably majority of the day just freaking out and just building it up in my head.
Yeah.
I kind of had writer's block, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
But then I came up with the idea of a little boat that was in a ring that would rock from side to side.
Yeah.
And the marquee would sit into the boat.
Yeah.
And I put like a little snake on one side and a little crown on the other for the Serpent King.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Beautiful piece.
And that's when I started. It's real weird because I grew up in Wagga Wagga and have fond memories of my grandparents' farm at The Rock. If you've ever heard of The Rock, shout out to The Rock.
Okay.
It's a town. But like, so I was so far removed from the ocean, it's not funny. Yet all the pieces I make, and that's doing the young the jewelers comp, that showed me that, because they were ideas that I just pulled straight out of my head. I didn't think about them because I didn't really have the time to start making them, and both pieces were nautical themed. One was a boat, one was an octopus.
Yeah.
And it just showed me that, oh, this is something that whatever's in me is sort of getting pulled out. I've always had this love of pirate ships and tropical islands and animals of the deep. So I just sort of went, fuck it, I'll just follow that. Like, it's obviously something that flows out of me well. I've tried to do Art Deco pieces and stuff, and I love trying to do those, but they just don't quite work for me.
And what was the camaraderie like, competition?
I was really scared because I was up against some guys that I've heard of and I've seen their work, and it's absolutely spectacular. I felt little Bogan Mick from Wagga's not going to be able to compete on this level, but I felt I did pretty well. I came third the first one and second the second one.
Yeah, very good.
I think. And then...
That must be a bit of a rush, especially when you are going against people who are names you heard of to...
Yeah, and like the...
have your craft and your skill justified to yourself, like, I mean, doing this the right way.
There was competition for sure, like we're competing, that's the whole point.
Mm.
But it wasn't snarky, it wasn't people like hiding what they're doing or stealing tools or hiding shit. It was nothing like that. It was like we're all there having a lot of fun, you know.
I also saw on that you were doing things for Fashion Week as well.
Yeah.
So that is fun. Quite abroad from the Serpent King of Death
to
high-end fashion.
It was those pieces were for, I did two shows. I helped out with two shows. I just sort of rocked up. But one was in LA Fashion Week. And there's a photo of Julie Bishop and Rebel Wilson checking out my earrings as they stomp down the runway, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in saying that, they were pretty basic designs and it wasn't so much my actual design and whatnot. It was more of like, hey, Mick, can you knock this out for me? But, I mean, I'm not going to knock back that.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah. So you're helping with the sort of aesthetic that they're going for. Like, we need this.
It was for Zivago dresses.
Yeah.
And they're Australian designers.
Yeah.
From Perth, two girls. I think 2 years later, which was last year, I helped out for Australian Fashion Week. Yeah. That one I had a lot more design input. To go with these Pit Viper sunglasses. I don't know if you've seen Pit Viper sunglasses.
Yeah.
But they're the bee's knees. They're like these hell rad 80s, 90s retro mirrored sunnies.
Yeah.
But they come in like a whole bunch of different colours. But the whole thing was Miami night. So it was sort of up the Miami Strip, and it was this sort of 80s, 90s feel.
Yeah.
With these fluoro colours and gangster or mob, whatever style. Like, the whole point was meant to be trashy, over the top, kind of like a lot of gold.
Yeah,
like a drug dealer's wife, I guess.
Yeah.
So they wanted a sunglass chain that was also like a big name chain, which I made that, the Zivago, and also a headpiece that was sort of curved and follow the ear, which was go into the hair.
Yeah. How was that? Because I've dabbled in fashion a little bit, and they are fast paced and
it was the designers
under budget.
I mean, doing the first one, I spent so much time cleaning up every tiny minuscule detail of these earrings, and then after seeing the show, I realized I didn't need to do that, because they're basically to serve the purpose of going up and down, and that's it really.
Yeah. So you could have done a lower resolution type.
Yeah, because you're not going to see it up close. The main thing was having a nice mirrored polished surface with no fingerprints or whatever on it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it is moving down the runway and it's bouncing around, the light catches it. So the second one I learnt a lot, and I made everything a lot thinner.
Yeah.
Mainly focused on polishing the front and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And fitting it onto the models, because they were like, we want you to put it on the models and stuff before they run down the runway. That was really nerve-wracking. That was pure chaos, because I knew through the guy that did it, Matt at Mother and Father PR, he said, if a shoe falls off or a dress splits or they trip, like, the whole thing won't be a disaster, but it's not ideal.
Sure. There's a lot of pressure on it.
Yeah, and he's like, you have to put them on. So I'm like, okay, I can help. And it was crazy, because it was, I think the whole show was like a minute or two long. And it was these girls come in, and it was like being at the pit crew in Formula One. Like, everything flies off, everything flies back on, and they're straight back out there. And one or two girls would go, I'll be putting the sunglasses on them. And because these models don't know what they're meant to be wearing. They show up on the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a vague idea. And the dresses have all the power. The clothes.
They're the hero piece.
They have the sheet that has pictures of what they have to put on the model at what time.
Yeah.
And I remember putting a necklace on this one chick, and she's like, I don't wear this. And I'm taking an offer, and she's just about to go out, and the guy's like, no, you have to put it back on it. And I'm a short little bloke. I'm not that tall. I'm like knee height to a grasshopper. And these models are real tall. So I'm like leaning up trying to, and it's pitch black in there too.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, trying not to stab this bird in the eye as I'm putting these sunglasses on. But I didn't think I would enjoy it. I thought, like, I'm a bit of a knock-around bloke. This is not my sort of stuff, but it was amazing at how much goes into it.
Yeah.
How quickly everything moved, and, yeah.
Yeah, what was your brief? What was your lead time? Did someone come to you with sort of a details idea of what they wanted, or was it a bit more relaxed than that?
No, we sat down, from drawing to actually the day, we had a fair bit of time.
Yeah.
The guy who organised it, that's his whole job. So, I mean, he's really good at that. He gives himself more than enough time. And there was, we sat down, drew out what we wanted, and I had plenty of time to make it. There was also less pieces. There was like, I think, like maybe 10 necklaces and like 3 headpieces, whereas the other one was earrings, 26 earrings, I think, times 2 because there's 2.
Yeah. So.
That one caught me unaware because he goes, oh, I need earrings, and I thought it was just one set.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, no, for each model. I'm like, okay, how many is there? And he's like, 26. I'm like, that's okay. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to make 2 of these each.
Yeah.
But
what were you making them out of?
Just brass.
Yeah.
Yeah, just brass, because once again, it was just to go up and down the runway.
Yeah, right. Were you plating them, or was it just...
No.
Yeah.
I just spray them a bit of clear coat.
Yep.
I learnt that tip from my dad with all the old cars and stuff he does.
Okay.
Like rat rods when they want it to rust. But only want so much rust, not too much rust, if that makes sense.
Okay, yep.
They'll rust it and then they'll clear coat it. Or the brass, you'll polish it and then clear coat it.
Oh, right, sure.
So
that's a good idea, clear coating something within a process, like halfway through, like, and stop.
Well, we also used to see the, being a jeweler in Wagga, you have one unique feature of, we used to have the army cadets come through, because Kapuka base is there.
Yeah.
And a lot of them got sick of polishing their little brass, I think it's a buckle, and like some little clips for the belt.
Mm-hmm.
So they would often ask us to polish it, and they would pay us and whatnot, and you'd see them go straight out the front and spray it with hairspray or clear coat so that they didn't have to do it again.
So when you get something like the Kraken back, the thing I struggle with is cleaning up organic shapes.
Yeah.
Have you got any tips for me? I just shave everything into a flat surface at some point.
I've learnt through repetition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Sometimes you fall into the style of you make a ring, you hammer it, file it, emery it, polish it, and you follow those steps.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can skip one or two of those steps, depending on the quality of the finish you've received in the casting or the metal you've got or how you've treated it. And I found a lot of the time I'll just use like a good 1,000 and then a really strong triply. But it depends on how much detail that has. So, for instance, the squid, the outside of the tentacles, just a quick 1,000 and then a really hard, warm triply. But the inside, if I was to do that, I would lose those curved edges of the arm.
Yeah. Especially where you got the...
the suction cap.
Yeah.
So then I use just a little goat's hair with just a little bit of triply and then a rouge.
Yeah.
But then also, especially if silver, oxidizing is your best friend. In the sense that with something like that, it
covers sort of, a world of sin.
Yeah, but that's what I've found. It all depends on the castings. Like sometimes you can get a really bad CAD where the layers seem to go into the metal almost, not just onto the surface.
Yeah.
And you won't necessarily see those lines until you sort of get it into a semi-polished stage, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like kind of... That's really frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, having like that 2 steps forward.
Yeah, 1 step back.
what part is the most laborious for you in jewelry making? What's like, getting to see?
Laborious. It depends on what I'm in the mood for. Like sometimes I'm sick of soldering.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I'm sick of polishing.
Sure. I think sometimes it's your frame of mind, especially with soldering, for me, is if I'm in a good frame of mind, I can do good soldering, and then sometimes it just will never go right.
Yeah.
It's just, I've got to put it down. I'm not on a winning streak that day. I've got to walk away and do something else.
I know it's the most laborious thing, making emery sticks. So I can get right in the fucking bin. Because I'm really impatient, and you have to spend that time scoring it properly and rolling it.
Yeah.
And I go, you know, it's stuff, this will work out. She'll be right, mate. And I just knock it out, and it turns it like an oval shape instead of a square rectangle, whatever you have.
So that non-jewellery making prep.
Yeah, the boring stuff, I guess.
Kind of stuff. And so the jewellery fair is in a couple of weeks, and you're not going to be here, hey?
No. But, yeah, I enjoy going to the fair. I mean, I grew up in a small country town, so I love knocking around and having a bit of a chin wag and a schooner or two with the trade, you know?
Yeah.
I find it's good, it's healthy to sort of, you know, chat to people, especially in this world where most of the communication is on Facebook.
Let's get real life action happening.
And a lot of, like, some people don't have their face in the profile or whatever, so.
Yeah.
And I've been at the trade fair a couple of times where people are like, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so. I'm like, who the fuck are you? And you're like, oh, yeah, you're the guy that helped me out with that. Or, yeah, you're the girl that made that, yeah.
Yeah.
You know? But, the trade fair's fun. I mean.
Yeah, right.
There's always negative comments about stuff, but
I mean, always, yeah. Well, the young jewelers are having a do on Saturday, the 25th of August at 7:30 p.m. And that is, if I can pronounce this correctly in my best Italian accent, Casa Ristorante Italiano.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to try that for my accent.
No. No, go on, have a go.
Oh, show me the word.
If you can read my scroll.
Casa Ristorante Italiano. How's that?
I think you need the hand, the Italian hand.
Yeah,
it helps with your accent.
Yeah, Italiano. No, I can't. Yeah, that would be fun. I wish I was going.
Yeah, so it'd be a great night. And also, Jason Ree of Ree Designs has been starting up a night once a month.
Oh, like a little social thing.
Little social thing, go for drinks. And we went...
he's a good bloke, despite what they say about him, eh?
He's a great bloke. I haven't heard anything bad about him.
Oh, I'm just talking shit. make him feel self-conscious,
And we had a great... And the funniest thing is that we had a bit of a discussion about CAD versus...
Handmade,
and it didn't end up in tears. It was a civil discussion over lager.
it's like, it's the most stupid thing. It's like, do you want a fast horse and a crap jockey, or a crap horse and a fast? Like, there's so many pros and cons. I think it's just here to stay, and it is what it is.
Yeah,
it's one for one, and
I mean, I probably propagate it more than it should be, because I think everyone's gotten over it. I think it was an argument from 4 years ago, really.
Yeah, I mean...
Everyone's moved on.
That conversation won't be happening in, like, 10, 15 years, you know.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you can get 3D printers at Audi now, so...
That's insane.
You know, in 10, 15 years, what are these printers going to be like, you know?
Yeah.
It might be very similar, I doubt it. They'll probably be very high quality and all that sort of stuff. And
yeah. So if you are in Sydney, come down to say hello, have some drinks with us. Maybe I'll see you, Mick, at a Jason Ree organised.
Yeah, definitely. If
Bevy Fest.
I'd love that. Get carried away, maybe.
It'd be good fun. Yeah. I think we got a little bit tipsy, but not too bad. We haven't suggested karaoke yet, so
yeah, no.
I think we were on the good side of sober.
Because the last young jewelers at the fair last time, we had a very interesting night. A lot happened.
Yeah, kick on.
Yeah, oh, we just had a couple of, you know, beers and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Some locals wandered in and all sorts started happening. It was fun, though. It was one of those nights, you know, where just the stars align and the people in the bar entertain you.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yeah, great. And it's touching base with the industry, isn't it?
Yeah,
so, like, it's going to put you in a good mood. Everyone should be in a good mood.
Swapping techniques and chatting and...
Yeah, talking shop with people who know what you're talking about.
Nerding out about metal and rock, really.
Yeah, so should be great. Come with a good attitude. If you've got a bad attitude, then just stay at home.
Yeah.
Yep. But, yeah, you're not. We'll hopefully see you next year.
Yeah, definitely, with bells on.
So thanks for listening. You are... Do you want to repeat your handle?
Yeah, just Moon Jewelry Design at... Serpent King of Death. I make shirts and everything, so hit me up.
Sure. Oh, really? Oh, cool.
And I make shirts, yeah.
What do you reckon your time frame is on your Kraken?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I've told enough people about it that I actually have to do shit about it now.
Yeah, right.
Because they asked me about it.
Yeah, sure.
So hopefully.
When the inspiration takes you, but.
I'll aim for the trade fair next year.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's interesting. Maybe we should get a little show going on.
Maybe.
everyone submit your opus for the trade fair next year.
Your big whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a piece that had moving parts and lights and...
I think that's mega cool.
Just something that's just completely over the top.
Yeah.
And that was the point, because it's like... Almost like a resume in some way.
Yeah. Oh, it's a piece of you, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
It's me showing myself at what things I had learned.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mick. Take care of yourself.
See you later.